Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're delighted that you joined us again. Scott's still playing air piano over here, yeah. So he gets better every week.
I know. That one almost looked real.
That almost did.
Almost did. Hey, we'd love for you to join in the conversation. Jump on Facebook at /The Music Row Show, or you can find us on the Twitters. By the way,
at the Music Row Show,
The Music Row Show, producer Katrina,
yes,
is listening in today.
Yay, Katrina
from California. We miss you, darling, and happy to hear you.
Absolutely,
hear from you. Very excited.
And don't forget, after the show, you can find us on Instagram, also at the Music Row Show.
Right.
And you know what, Scott? I don't want to delay this anymore. Why don't we introduce our guest here?
That's right. Jane is another guest that falls in the "what took us so long" category to get us in here, to get her in here. She is a hit songwriter. She's had cuts by Tammy Wynette, Reba, Colin Ray, Joe DiMassina, Ray Stevens, so many more. She's written a workbook. Right?
I have.
Taught classes and workshops all over the country.
This is true.
On songwriting and is also developing and producing new talent. We just have a ton to talk about. We're thrilled to finally say, 10 years later, Jane Bach, we're happy you're here, and welcome to the Music Road Show.
Yay!
I want to know
all
about your Ray Stevens cut.
Yeah, really? There was no Ray Stevens cut.
Was there
no
Ray Stevens cut?
That was news to me. No, unless he cut it and I didn't know about it.
Uh-oh. No. You might have some money coming to you.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Then forgive me.
That's okay.
I messed up there.
Ray Price.
Well... Okay.
Yeah, it was Ray Price.
Are you sure?
No.
I know you're sure. I'm just wondering what I read because it was. Oh, never mind. We can talk during the break about that.
Yeah, for sure. No. But I appreciate it.
I'm firing my research assistant.
Wow.
Just a different Ray.
Yeah.
So when did you first realize that most singers you heard on the radio didn't write their own songs, and what made you try your hand at it?
It took me a long time to realize that. I've always written songs, but I never realized you could actually earn a living at it. And of course, once I moved to Nashville, it confirmed that it's very difficult to
earn a living at it. Yeah.
But I seriously did not realize that the singers did not write their songs. And of course,
up until like what age?
I want to say up until the Beatles.
Okay.
Truthfully, up until the Beatles. And then I thought that was quite unique. They were actually writing songs that they were recording, and I thought that was exciting. The biggest influence on me, probably when it came to making the decision to actually take this seriously, was John Denver.
Oh,
and, okay. Yeah. And I was listening to the radio one day, and I actually had the audacity to say, man, I could do that. I mean,
sure.
That's easy. And
but you knew he had written his own, or you saw that he'd written somebody else's song.
He was known as a singer-songwriter,
right?
And he didn't write all of his songs, but he wrote a great deal of them. I just was very impressed with the fact that there were singers who actually, once I discovered it, wrote their own songs.
Right.
I was very grateful once I came to Nashville that there were those who did not,
and
that who needed songwriters, because I've never aspired to be an artist, and I'm not really a singer. I'm a performing songwriter.
Yeah.
So, So I was thrilled to find out, and I moved here in 1982, long time ago, and it was quite different back then. The music community was a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And it was just an amazing time to be here. It really was. It was a great learning experience. I learned from the masters. You mentioned Harlan in the hour before Jim was talking about. Harlan was a dear friend, and I learned a lot from him. He also gave me my upright grand piano.
Wow.
That I treasure, one of my most treasured possessions. And, it was a great opportunity once I came here to learn the craft of songwriting, because, you know, you may have the innate ability to write, but if you want to write commercially, you have to learn the craft and perfect that. So
that piano must be odd. I'm still thinking about the piano.
The piano.
Does that have all three chords on it?
It and the truth, let me tell you.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow. Love that.
It's a honky-tonker.
Nice.
It's a honky-tonker. It's great.
Well, how was the transition from New York. You were in the city, right?
I was born and raised in the city. Actually, when I was 16, we moved to the suburbs, okay, to Rockland County.
Okay.
And went to Nanuet High School. Hey to everybody.
Yay.
And yay.
What was the team? The Nanuet what?
The Inuits.
The Knights.
The Nanuet,
the Nanuet
Inuits.
Knights.
Oh, Knights.
Yeah, the Knights. We were the Golden Knights.
The Golden Knights.
I was, I mean, it was only 20 miles outside of the city. So,
and
you
spent the first 16 years in the city.
In the city, right. And moving to Nashville was a bit of a culture shock at the time. Nashville was a very small little city, and it was the South. And
so
I
what
was
were some
a
Yankee. Of the, what were some of the biggest transitional hurdles for you?
Understanding what everybody was saying. There mm-hmm. was a real, one of my best friends became Becky Hobbs. I'm sure you know Becky. And, mm-hmm. and Becky is from Oklahoma. And we always, our conversations were always, what did you say? What did you say? It took a while to be able to acclimate my ears to the accent.
Interesting.
But don't I have a Southern accent now?
You sure do.
Yeah, really.
Yes, yeah, Southern New York.
Southern New York.
So I'm guessing that your New York friends must have been aghast at the idea that you were going to move
Most
to Nashville.
Most of my friends, when I told them I was moving to Nashville, thought I was nuts.
They what was their impression of what you were going to encounter here, and how much of that turned out to be true or false?
Okay. Their impression was the movie Deliverance. That was their impression, seriously. And, you know, I mean, when I got here, of course, I would call them all and say, they actually have running water.
Wow.
And indoor plumbing. And it was just wonderful. I love this city. This is a great city. And it certainly has grown beyond my expectations.
Right.
And
you're almost back in New York.
I am, truthfully. I am, yes. But, it's just, it's been an interesting journey.
Now, this has nothing to do with anything, but how long from maybe when you went back to visit, was it 6 months, a year, 2 years, when your friends started saying, you're talking funny?
Oh, when I would go back, they would all say to me, you have a Southern accent.
Yeah.
I don't
hear it.
You know, maybe there was a y'all that crept in every now and then, but.
Or just lengthening a word here and there.
I don't know. I do think I slowed down.
Right.
That I did do. And
you have to.
You have to.
You
it's
have
survival.
To.
And because when I moved down here, I did get a lot of slow down, Jane.
There, Charlie.
Whoa,
easy.
You know,
easy.
That's right. You don't have to talk so fast. You know, there's a lot of hurry up and wait down here.
I called you 5 minutes ago. You haven't called me back yet. You know.
Really? You know? And true. And but it was interesting. To me, it was just an interesting thing. My biggest issue when I moved down here, or the biggest thing I confronted, was the fact that I was a woman and a Yankee. That was the most difficult thing. And, you know, at that time, there were not that many female writers, mm-hmm. and very, very few. There were girl singers,
right,
mm-hmm.
and wives, and that was about it, you know. But, you know, but there was a small circle of us.
So did you guys seek each other out, the other?
Well, I, you know, it's interesting because I came from a short period in the business world. I was in advertising after college. And so I had that part of my brain, well, that would be that part of my brain, on the business end of it, and then this part of my brain on the creative end of it. Mm-hmm. And I realized this is a business, and so the bottom line is the bottom line, and you have to meet the people that will advance you. And I don't mean that in a usury way. I just mean you need to meet the people that you can relate to and that you can learn from. And I was very fortunate. It just happened for me. I just started meeting some of the best writers in town. And I met a young girl who she and I began writing together. Her name is Matresa Berg, and Matresa and I began writing together. We became writing partners. She actually ended up moving in with me for a while.
Oh, wow.
And we wrote a big hit for Reba in mm-hmm. that apartment. And, you know, there were other young, Jan Buckingham was mm-hmm. had recently moved to town, and a young woman named Shauna Harrington. There were not that many of us. Pam Rose, Marianne Kennedy were in town, of course, but there weren't that many of us, and there were very few publishing companies and very few labels. And
We've come full circle.
Yeah, it's kind of like
come
now.
Full circle.
Truly, yeah, but now they've been gobbled up by, or defunct, one of the two.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an interesting process, and I think it was more a matter. I mentioned Larry Henley earlier when we were talking off the air. Someone asked me in front of a group of people, I don't understand. You've been in town 4 years now, and you've had all these cuts, and you've had number one records. How did you do it? And Larry chimed in and said she was too stupid not to know she couldn't do it. She came here expecting to do it. It never occurred to her that it wasn't going to happen. And I believe that a lot of that has to be true. I think your attitude about how you do it and how you approach it really has a lot to do with how far you're going to go, and you just can't stop. You have to keep doing it. So
keep
no
putting
failure,
yourself out
no
there.
Failure, just stopping too soon.
That's it, right?
Really.
There you go.
Really.
It's hard to imagine. I moved here in 2004. You moved here in 2002.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine a Nashville without scores of writers' nights all over town.
None.
But
there
when
were
you
none.
Moved to town, the Bluebird had opened up the year you got here, right?
Yeah, actually, the Bluebird, I moved here before the Bluebird
right.
opened up. Yeah, there was nothing.
So then how were you guys networking? How did that happen at the time?
A place called Close Quarters. It was a bar.
Okay.
And it's now the Boundary, actually, you know,
oh, okay.
on 20th. Yeah.
yeah.
We would go over there 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, we would get into town not between 9 and 10 in the morning and write all day at the writers' houses. That's what they were called. The publishing company said writers' houses. Now we have writers' rooms. But these were writers' houses.
Back then they had a whole house.
They had a whole house. They
nice.
Did. And and we all wrote with each other from different companies, wrote within the company. It was just everybody would, you know, you didn't have to call first. You just showed up. And that was a big part of the networking. I guess we didn't look at it networking. I don't know if we even knew the word back then,
yeah.
truthfully. But that was how we networked. And then at 4:30, 5 o'clock, no one wanted to deal with the rush hour, which back then was nothing. But no one wanted
yeah.
to deal with the rush hour. So we would all meet at Close Quarters. And that is how we networked. Those were some fun times.
Now, was it just drinking and having fun, or did you guys actually start doing guitar pulls
and
stuff?
Oh, no, it was having fun.
Okay, just fun.
But it was interesting because it was, back then, it was people like James Stroud, who was a session drummer and,
yeah.
and wanted to be a producer, and Paul Worley, who was a session player and you know, wanted to be a producer, and we all kind of came up in the business together at the same time. And I mentioned Matresa. She's now in the Songwriting Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was interesting, and it was comfortable. It was really very comfortable. I understand how it is now. I work with, part of, I feel the perk of being an older writer, much older writer, is a part of the old guard, is that I am hooked up with all of these young singer-songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jane, you know, can you write with us? She just got signed here, or whatever. Help her with her writing. Help her find direction. And it's wonderful. I love it. I absolutely love it. But they talk to me about how difficult it is for them now. And, boy, very truthfully, I would think twice at this point. I would really think twice were I just starting out again, because it's extremely competitive. Although competition is great.
Sure. Yeah.
Competition is necessary.
But the odds are much
the
greater.
The odds are yeah. astronomical. And, you know, there are little groups. There are little groups.
Very clicky.
And yeah,
can be.
You know, yeah, it is clicky. And I think most situations like this would be clicky when you have that many people. When I first moved here, there was hardly anybody. So we were one big group, one
right.
big clique,
yeah.
you know. And I will say a lot more welcoming and a lot easier to assimilate into. But there's so much talent in this town now. I mean, everyone that my plugger or I'll get an email from a manager who says, you know, my writer just signed with whatever, this pub company or that label, and I really would love for you to work with them. And I think, you know, yeah, come on over. They come to me. You know, it's great. I stay at home.
Yeah.
They come to me. And you know, they talk to me about how difficult it is. And I think, just stay the course. Don't worry about how difficult it is. Just do what it is you love to do. Make music. And if
yeah,
you want to make right. music, you'll always make a living.
That's awesome.
So
that is awesome.
Yeah, if you want to be famous, it's going to be really hard.
Yes.
But if you want to make music, you can make $50, $100. And,
whatever, yeah. You know. I mean, and especially nowadays, you can do your own product.
Mm-hmm.
You can do your own records. You don't have to have Sony doing your records. It would be nice to have Sony promoting it, but you don't, yeah. You know. But right. Again, you know, it depends upon what your aspirations are, what your dreams are, and what your goals are.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I teach, as you mentioned, and one of the first things I tell them is think about why you're here. Because there's nothing wrong with wanting to be famous, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to walk the red carpet and have a lot of money. That's sure. Wonderful.
Well, we're going to get into that definitely a little bit more. We're going to take a quick break. Want to remind y'all that Toyota of Cool Springs is our sponsor of this segment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. great company. We've been using them for an awful long time, not only looking at cars, and matter of fact, I'm down to the last month and a half for my car, so uh-oh. I'm about to go get a new one, and I'm going to go talk to George and see great. What we can do. Such a comfortable buying experience. Thing is, sometimes when you go, and you've bought cars before, and you get that pit in your gut, you really put it off because you don't want to do it because you know it's going to be, you're going to feel
the
slimy when it's done.
Stuff, yeah.
You don't feel that way over there. It's just what Jane was just talking about, comfortable. It's comfortable there.
Yep.
That's
and
a nice thing to
Scott
say.
Scott mentioned George. George is the owner. Ask for him when you're there. He'll take great care of you. You can find him on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com. And we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Jane Bach here on the Music Row Show.
It's 5 o'clock. And there's a place around the block from here. Where you can drown all your troubles in singles and doubles, bad karaoke and beer. It ain't no Taj Mahal. It's just a little hole in the wall. But there's something about it that keeps the place crowded. It sure ain't down.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. If you're thinking, I know that voice, that's Charles Esten from TV's Nashville doing a song called Down at the Lost and Found, and our guest this hour, Jane Bach, wrote that song.
With Billy Lee. Chip, Charles Esten, I met Chip forever ago out in L.A. We had a mutual friend who asked me if I would meet with her friend who was a working actor,
mm-hmm.
and that he wanted to be a singer-songwriter, and he wanted to get into that Nashville groove, you know.
Really?
And, yeah,
that's
and
awesome.
So this was a very long time ago. And so I said, hey, if he's a friend of yours, why not? And he came over to my house out in L.A. the next day. And just the sweetest guy. He's just really an absolute darling guy. And we started writing that very first day. And when he auditioned for the show Nashville, he used a song that he wrote with me, which thrilled me no end. And we've written a lot together. He's an awesome guy. I'm really excited for what's happened for him personally and for the show. I'm glad they got picked up by CMT.
Yeah,
yay.
Yeah.
That's tremendous.
Oh, wow.
My phone is talking to you.
My phone was excited about
I know.
Nashville getting
oh
picked
God.
Up also.
Yes, the girls get excited about Chip. They
right?
Do.
Absolutely.
You speaking, and since you just brought this up, you've spent a lot of quality time in L.A. writing and living there and being part of that.
I do.
What are the differences community-wise and co-write etiquette-wise for those of us thinking of maybe trying to go swim in that pool for the first time?
It's a big pool. it wasn't something I had done for the first three quarters of my career at all. But after I was with Warner Chappell, like Jim, I was with him I was actually a Chappell writer.
Oh, wow.
Back in 1985. Okay. And then in 87 or so, Warner Brothers bought Chappell and okay. we became Warner Chappell. But when I left Warner Chappell in 2000, I signed with another company for a short period of time here in town. And then it was like, I don't know what to do at this point. I really don't. The town was changing. The style of music was changing. And I was raised on rock, you know, rock and pop music. And so a dear friend of mine suggested, she has a publishing company, and she suggested I sign with her, but she's out in L.A., and I thought about it long and hard, and I realized it might be a really good opportunity. not only for me and for stretching, you know, for finding new opportunities.
Yeah.
Oh, creatively stretching, totally. Writing for TV, writing for movies. And it's been wonderful. I've been doing that for about 8 or 9 years now. And it's been great. I've been able to get songs on TV. Now, I did have a song on the show Nashville that I did not write with Chip.
Oh.
And it was actually placed out of L.A. So it was not placed out of Nashville. But it's, as far as the writing is concerned, songwriting is songwriting and co-writing is co-writing. So that's something that's the same wherever you go.
Yeah.
L.A. is very spread out. So it's not, you know, as cohesive as Nashville. And there are pockets of writing communities, but it's not one big writing community. But they do have organizations and, you know, LA Women in Music is an organization that I had joined when I first got out there. And
they've not accepted me, by the way. I keep trying to.
Yeah.
You can. Men joined. You're so silly. Men joined.
Yeah.
But I did meet some wonderful, wonderful singer-songwriters through them. And just getting out, I do a lot of playing out there now and writers' rounds. When I first started going out there, there weren't any writers' rounds.
Right, right.
Then they started doing them. They call them song circles. And
well, they have to be different.
They have to be
different. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's wonderful out there. I love it out there. You can't beat the weather.
Yeah.
And it's like I have two lives.
Out there, so
an L.A. life and a Nashville life. And it's interesting.
Have you gone back and done any writing in New York?
I have.
And then
yes.
How different is that from L.A. and Nashville?
It's all the same.
Really?
Yeah, it's all the same. Writing is writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I get that creatively, but I just didn't know if there's like etiquette, if there's things that are different as far as how things are split and how people treat.
You know, my attitude, the way I was raised up in this town is the way things are split. If there are two of you writing a song, it's split 50-50.
Right.
If there are three of you, it's in thirds.
Right.
And there's none of this, well, I wrote more than you did.
Well, we've heard that from other LA writers that they do that. You know, they count words and be like,
they
all right,
do.
You get 37.2%.
Some of them. It depends. I don't generally write with people like that.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
you know, and, you know, I mean, I will say without naming names, there are some here in this town that do that as
really?
Well.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Dum, dum, dum.
Da-dum. I sense an off-the-air conversation coming on.
Well, play us a song. You got a guitar set up.
Okay. This is something, it's a little ballad that I wrote. You were talking about I Can't Make You Love Me.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the answer to that. It's a letter. I know that if I called you, told you that I needed you, you'd be at my front door before we said goodbye. And everyone can see you wear your heart upon your sleeve for me. You think I hung the moon. You see stars in my eyes. It's unconditional. It's vulnerable. And there's no holding back. But I don't love you like that. You're everything I ever thought I wanted, and you've given me much more than I dreamed I'd ever have. Lord knows that I have tried at least 1,000 times to feel the way you feel, but I can't. You're head over heels, your passion is real, and your love is just a matter of fact, but I don't love you like that. Oh, I wish that I could stay, but I'd only be wasting your time. Oh, believe me, it's better this way, but that don't make it easy saying goodbye. If you could only be everything I need, we'd be the envy
of all of our friends. But you want all of me, and that's something I can't give you. So this is where our story ends. Well, I think you're wonderful, but I'm just not comfortable with where your trusting heart is at, 'cause I don't love you like that. I don't love you like that. I don't love you like that. No. Wish I could love you like that.
Well, thank you. I love this audience out there. That's great. I want to say I wrote that with one of the young singer-songwriters that I've been working with. Her name is Mira Parfit. Hope she's listening. Hi, Mira. Mira is a wonderful new young talent. I met her. This is how we meet people. I met her actually just a few months ago out in Palo Alto, California. I was playing. I had been invited to play a songwriter round out there. And she was in the same round, and I was just taken by her. She's wonderfully talented. Nice. And she comes here back and forth like I go to L.A. back and forth. So I just saw her today.
So you meet in Kansas? Or
just about, yeah. yeah.
All right. Let's go back to what you were talking about before we went to break, because you were talking about working with the younger girls.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be famous. You had a thought there.
I was saying it's what I, one of the first things I say when I teach my course, I ask them why they're coming. You have to examine your motivations for doing something. I don't care if you just want to be a better songwriter because it's a hobby, or you want to do it commercially, you want to earn a living at it, do it professionally. Whatever it is, you need to do it the best you can do it. So if your motivation is you want to be famous, you want to be rich, that's great, because there are fortunes to be made in this business. But making a living is another story. And so my words of wisdom to them are, first and foremost, do it because you want to make music. That really has to be the first thing. And if that's why you're doing it, you will always make a living. You may not make millions of dollars, but you'll make a living and you'll have a wonderful life. Music provides a beautiful, beautiful life. It has for me.
So. That's awesome. Well, you've said that when you got here, you felt like you already knew how to write, but you needed to bone up on the craft. So what did that mean exactly? Can you expand on that?
Well, yes, absolutely. You know, everybody, I believe everybody has the ability to put their thoughts on paper. I think a lot of times it's just their own insecurity that's preventing them from doing it. But I have always written, always, ever since I was a child. And writing for commercial purposes is totally different than just writing a song that your mommy likes and that your neighbors like. And that's wonderful. But because this is so competitive, you have to rise above everybody else in order to even be considered a professional writer. Not only that, there is a reason for the rules of songwriting. And I know most people hate rules, but there are reasons for those rules. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they've worked. They've worked. People, when they're listening to songs, they want to hear that rhyme. They want to hear that hook again. They want to know, you were talking about the bridge. The bridge takes you from, crosses you from one point in your song to the finality of your song. And they want to know, is there a summation? Is there an end to this story? What's going on? And that's where you're going to grab them in your bridge. So there are rules, there are regulations for songwriting, and there are rhyme patterns, there are things that you need to bone up on and learn about. Mm-hmm. That's the craft of songwriting. The art of songwriting is sitting down with your guitar or your piano and coming up with something really pretty or something really cool. But I was an evaluator for NSAI back in my lean days, and mm-hmm. and I really enjoyed doing it. But I would get songs in from all over the country, and it amazed me how many people really said they listened to the radio, but they didn't understand mm-hmm. the structure of right. a song, you know, whether it be verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, fade, you know, whatever. There are certain structures, mainstream commercial structures that are adhered to. They had no clue about that.
Right.
And I would tell them, take your favorite song, your favorite hit song, actually write it down so that you can see verse, chorus, where they're putting the hook, how important the hook is. And there are different styles within the structure, you know, the verse with the hook at the end of the verse, and then a verse with a hook at the end of the verse and a bridge, you know, it doesn't have right. to have a chorus. So, but that's what the craft of songwriting is.
Okay. And it's like knowing those rules, getting those under your skin allows you to break them sometimes, but in an informed way.
There you go. I'm so happy you said that, because invariably, one of the things I say is, please do not start your song with your hook and then the hands go up.
What about
Desperado? What about Yesterday? And I always say, you have to learn how to play by the rules before you're in a position to break them intelligently, because the rules are there for a reason. I know none of us like being tied down by rules, but after you've mastered the rules, it comes second nature. They're not rules anymore. It's just songwriting, and mm-hmm. it becomes second nature to you. Mm. And then if you want to start with the hook, you can.
You just do
go for it.
You just can. Yeah. Go for it, right.
Let's take another break. We're going to be back. We're going to see if we can't get another song from Jane. You're listening to The Music Row Show. This is Jane Bach with us. We'll be right back.
Within four walls, I kiss the moon goodnight. Within four walls, I sing to morning light. Within four walls, I set ablaze this music in my soul. Oh my God, within four walls.
Oh yeah, welcome back within to the four Rosha. Walls. That's Beth Current doing a song called Four Walls, co-written with our guest this hour, Jane Bach. And, you know, that's such a cool song. Do you have any other songs you may have written with Jane?
Oh, my gosh.
With Beth?
What a
Beth
great segue.
Goodness. Talk about a segue. Actually, we also wrote that with Joey Sykes.
Okay.
Who is an Orange County.
Nice.
He's with the Babies. He's a lead guitar player for the Babies.
Oh, yeah.
He's amazing. He really is great. He's the guy I wrote the song that we got on the show, Nashville. I wrote it with him. But Beth is another one of these young singer-songwriters that she moved here from. Where is she from? Kentucky. She's from Kentucky. And I love working with her. She's, as you heard, an amazing singer.
Her voice sounded like a woodwind instrument.
She's
beautiful.
Unbelievable. Just really beautiful. Anyway, we wrote this song. It's called Unbreakable. And I always dedicate this to my daughter. I guess it's for anybody, but it's definitely a woman empowerment mm-hmm. song. If you can handle that.
My heart is heavy, so very heavy, and it's trying to take me down. I've got to rise up, I've got to rise up, and get my feet on solid ground. 'Cause this is not who I am. I will never give all in. You won't ever get the best of me. I am the victor, I am the conqueror, I wear the crown. I am a fighter, a bare-bones survivor, and every time you come around, I am unreachable, I am untouchable, I am unbreakable. can't deny me, you can't get nothing by me, no, you can't do me like you do, no, no, oh, oh, I thought I knew you, but I see right through you, and I won't be your fool, 'cause this is not who I am. I will never give all in, you won't ever get the best of me. I am the victor, I am the conqueror, I wear the crown. I am a fighter, a bare-bone survivor, and every time you come around, I am unreachable, I am untouchable, I am unbreakable. Because of all your lying, I did my share of crying, and then I started to see, yeah, I owe a little to you, 'cause if I hadn't lost you, I never would have found me. And I am the victor, I am the conqueror, I wear the crown. I am a fighter, a bare-bone survivor, and every time you come around, I am unreachable, I am untouchable, I am unbreakable. Oh, yeah, unbreakable.
Yeah. Wow.
Sorry, my voice kind of gave out in the middle of that one.
Well, even though that song's called Unbreakable, we now need to take a commercial break.
Aww.
And I'm sorry about that.
Segue.
Yes, yes. We'll be right back with more of Jane Bach. You're listening to The Music Row Show. Stick around.
You know, there's nothing so sweet as the sound of an acoustic guitar in the hands of a pro. And there's no one better than LR Bags at bringing that glorious sound to life on stage. That's why touring musicians all over the world turn to LR Bags for their amazing acoustic guitar pickups to faithfully amplify their instrument and deliver great sound to their audiences with no hassle. For over 20 years, LR Bags has dedicated themselves to making pickups that reflect the true sound of the instrument. From their award-winning M1 and iMix guitar systems to their equally impressive violin and mandolin systems. But if you play guitar, violin, or mandolin, you want a professional sound, no matter what. And you want your amplified instrument to sound like it's not. LR Bags, the ultimate in acoustic guitar amplification. Visit LRBags.com for more details.
Okay, guys, are you a writer or a singer new to town, or you want to make the most out of your Nashville visit?
Well, you need to visit MarkAllenBarnett.com. Let professional songwriter, coach, and mentor Mark Allen Barnett show you behind the Nashville curtain.
That's right, with songs recorded by Shelby Lynn, John Barry, David Ball, Mark Allen brings his vast experience to help you through the roadblocks and hurdles of today's music business. His clients have included Frankie Ballard, Megan Lindsay of The Voice, and many more.
He's got totally customized personal workshops that can be yours either for a full day or multiple days. Song critiques, performance evaluations, you visit Music Row Studios, you learn how to meet with co-writers, publishers, producers, record labels, and the most important thing, you learn what not to do, because you only get one chance to make a first impression in this town, and you don't blow it.
So for more information, visit MarkAllenBarnett.com. That's MarkAllenBarnett.com. And remember, you don't choose music. Music chooses you.
Good morning. I'm Danny Boyles, your host for Sunday Down South. I know that many of you are on your way or getting ready to attend worship services this morning. We here at WSM want to take this time to say thank you for tuning us in each Sunday. Now, if you have a business that would like to reach out to our audience, contact our station manager, Chris Kulik, at 615-458-9427. And thanks again for listening to Sunday Down South on The Legend, WSM.
Our lives are busy around the clock, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You need your bank to be ready when you are. At the Farmers Bank, we have the mobile solutions you need no matter what time of day it is. Online banking, mobile banking on your smartphone or tablet, Pop Money, text and email alerts, telephone banking, e-statements, bill pay, and so much more. Visit us at any branch or at thefarmersbank.net to learn more or to enroll. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Housing discrimination. Would you recognize it and report it? These folks did.
My landlord said rent will be cheaper if we're friends with benefits.
Because I'm legally blind, a landlord questioned whether I'd be capable of maintaining an apartment.
Our real estate agent said a different neighborhood with people like us might better suit our family.
To learn more about housing discrimination, visit hud.gov/fairhousing. Fair housing is your right. Use it. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
And now back to the Music Row Show.
Tough and push back, push back. Make that broken heart your break.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a tune called Push Back. It's co-written by our guest here this hour, Jane Bach, co-written with a guy named Bill DeLuigi, who we know here on the show. Great
guy.
And love.
And love.
We've done a few Bluebirds together.
Absolutely.
I'm playing the Bluebird Thursday.
Are you really?
I am. Well. I just played it a few weeks ago with our mutual friend, Billy Lee.
Billy Lee.
My round. I play there 3 or 4 times a year. I just love that venue.
That is so
it's
cool.
Just wonderful, yeah.
So who's in the round with you?
It is me and Lance Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know Lance.
Yeah, he's
Lance
been on
Carpenter,
the show.
Mary Beth Current, the girl
you just heard,
and Mira Parfit.
Very
nice.
With two newbies and me and Lance. It should
be a
great
awesome.
Show. Yeah.
So I'm guessing that if I want to be a pro songwriter, I should spend my time waiting for inspiration.
Hardly.
Is that right?
Hardly, no.
Tell me why.
Wrong again. You just need to get up every day of your life and set aside time to write, and you have to just create your inspiration.
Okay.
You know, there are times when you are inspired. We're all inspired
sure.
at times, but it's work. You have to come up with a great idea.
You have to
idea.
Be perspired.
You do.
Yeah.
You have to put a lot of perspire in it. I just feel like, you know, don't waste your time if it's not a great idea.
Okay.
And just, you know, and then there are some average ideas that you can create into great ideas by the way you write them. So
sure.
But yeah, you have to just do it every single day. I mean, I've been doing it 35 years in this town, and I get up every day and I write. And, you know, I write a lot by myself. I do co-write a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to keep doing it.
What about... I think you would agree that it's important when you, especially when you're first getting to town, to start building your tribe, the people around you. But on the other hand, something I've seen you write before is make sure that you're writing up. So
always.
How do you balance the tribe mentality with writing up?
Well, because even though you're writing with someone who might be your equal in experience,
mm-hmm.
Might even be have less experience than you, but maybe they... have a knack that you don't have. Maybe it's lyrical. Maybe you're stronger musically and they're stronger lyrically. That's writing up. You're going to learn from them. You
okay.
just want to put yourself in a situation where if you're co-writing, you are writing with someone that's going to inspire you and someone you're going to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
I learn from these new kids that I'm writing with. I learn something every time I write with them. And it's...
Go ahead. No,
oh.
I'm listening to you.
You're waving.
I am.
So, yeah, go on.
No, I lost my train of thought.
We were talking about writing up. It's
Oh, writing up. Yeah. No, writing up to me is just, yes, it, you know, you're not going to go up to a number one hit songwriter and say, hey, I love your stuff. Write with me. Boy,
right.
that's, we call that girming.
Yeah.
And
yep,
we want no
that.
Girming. You don't have to do that. You can write with someone, again, who's also new to town. But you will find that everyone has a particular strength. Mm-hmm. And everyone has something that they do differently than you that makes them special. Mm-hmm. And learn from it.
You know, we've talked about writing up a jillion times on the show over the years, and usually it involves writing with somebody, let's say somebody who's had cuts and some, you know. So I don't know if we've ever asked this question before. What if you're the up in that relationship? What are some tips as a writer writing with somebody who's less experienced and how to get the most out of that relationship?
Mm-hmm. Well, I write with a lot of people who are less experienced than I, and again, like I said, I find that I learn from every time I write with someone, I learn. Sometimes I learn I never want to write with them again.
That's what I learned.
Hey-o.
But generally speaking,
do you approach it differently than writing with somebody who's, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to approach it differently.
Sure.
Sometimes I have trouble remembering I'm not teaching them, I'm writing with them, you know.
Yeah, okay.
And I've had people, seriously, who for whatever reason we got hooked up to write. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it just wasn't working because I was doing all the writing and whatever they were coming up with wasn't acceptable. Mm-hmm. And you know, at that point I'm
you said you
them.
Would never talk about that, by
I
the
know.
Way
I'm
a little hurt,
you know, I lie, what did I tell you? I find that, you know, I have said to people, look, you know what? I teach songwriting and you should come and take my course or come and take someone else's. Steve Susskind has a wonderful.
Yes, he does.
Oh, he's wonderful. And there are books.
Jason Blum. Yeah.
Jason Blum. Mm-hmm. Amazing. There are books. You can go to the library and take out books and read about this business of songwriting, business of music, rather. Jimmy Webb's mm-hmm. book on songwriting. Anything. Listen to the radio here. You don't have to like what you're hearing, but listen to what they're playing,
right?
And learn. My thing is always learn. I mean, I hope I learn until the day I stop breathing.
I love your idea about taking a song that you really like and deconstructing it, because unconsciously that's what I did. You know, I don't know what made me do it. No, I didn't read it in any book, but you know, I would write out my favorite songs and be like, oh, and then I would put my own words to their melody.
Oh my gosh, that's
to just
what I,
to figure out how to do it.
That's one of my exercises that I give
talk
my
about
students.
That.
I tell them, take a hit song that you love, change the words, and then after you've changed the words, change the melody. And what you end up with is a hit scan. That's what you end up with. And so, you know, there is a formula. There's a definite formula. We were talking about the mashups.
Yeah.
And the reason, it's because they are in that hit scan. There is a definite scan. There's a scan to the music in the movies and musicals. And that's why they're able to do those 40 different movies, you know, to...
right.
What was that Kenny Loggins song? I can't think of it that they did it to. But, you know, so anything that you can do that's going to help you improve or help you figure out what it is you need to be doing, that's what you need to be doing. So,
you said something, or I read it, or I don't know if you said it or I read it, but it really struck me. It's so funny. After I'm still constantly learning after doing this for so many years, but you said a hit song is created, not written. And
when did I say that? I have said that.
I'm not sure,
yeah,
but
I have said it, because you don't write a hit song. You write a great song, and hit songs are created by promotion departments, by radio promoters. And you know, I mean, that is what creates hits. I know that we have all listened to the radio and heard hit songs and said, you got to be kidding.
Yeah.
But the fact is that there's also a difference between a hit song and a hit record.
Mm-hmm.
A great song and a great record. You know, these are the subtle differences that you need to be able to identify.
Because when you're writing, if you're thinking, let's write a hit song.
No, I never think that. I don't.
Right.
Never, ever.
But how many times have I heard that? How many times
sure,
have you heard that,
sure.
Nicole? Right. Let's write a hit.
Oh, no. Someone will say to me, did you write a hit today? And I go, oh, God, I don't know, but I think I wrote a good song.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll live with it and it'll become a great song.
That's really interesting what you said about great record, because there are some songs that, and I can think of a couple off the top of my head, that are fun to listen to They're great productions, but if you sat down and just tried to sing that song with a guitar only, it would stink. Because it just, you know, without all that other stuff, it's not a great song.
A great song you should be able to sing, I believe this, and this could just be my own personal opinion, and I'm sure it is, and I'm opinionated.
We like that.
A great song you should be able to sing a cappella just about. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should be able to just strum on the guitar and that song will shine through. Then there are great record songs where they're not great that way, but man, they translate with a great producer and great pickers. They translate into a great record. And, you know, that's why they have Grammys for record and for single. You know, for song of the year, single of the year, whatever, right. The record.
I don't think they do a very good job of explaining the difference on those awards show, because growing up, I was always confused by that. Well, wouldn't the best song be the, you know?
Not necessarily.
Well, yeah.
Not necessarily.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been great. Fun. I was a little nervous, but. Yeah,
and we're done already. Can you believe it?
Look at that. I'm so
where
sorry.
Where can we find you online?
JaneBach.com.
B-A-C-H.
B-A-C-H.com. I apologize. I have to update my website, but it has songs on there you can listen to. I'm a Facebook, Jane Bach.
There you go.
All right. There you go. Hino, you playing anywhere this week?
Not this week.
Me neither.
Woohoo!
Come to the Bluebird Thursday, although it's sold out, but you can get in and
get a pew seat.
You can peek in through the window.
Yeah. Peeking through the window.
All right, we'll see you next week on the Music Row Show. Thanks for listening.